It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 20. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here on this Friday, Steelers Nation, as the 2023 NFL season has officially kicked off. Thursday night, getting things started last night. It was the Detroit Lions upsetting the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes looking mortal. The receivers dropping 100,000 passes. Lions win 21-20. So football is back. We are back. Dave, how you doing?
Football is indeed back. I enjoyed that game on Thursday night. Just goes to show you, you miss a couple of key players like the Chiefs missing Kelsey and obviously Chris Jones. Even so, for a while there, it looked like they were going to do enough to win that game, because obviously you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, you're going to be in the game at all times there. Hat tip to the Lions. I mean, they really grind it out a win there. Even late in that game, some of those short yardage and, you know, a play or two made by Goff there. What are the Chiefs going to be, you know, without, we'll see obviously how long Kelsey's sidelined and all like that. But I'll tell you, the big winner last night was the Pittsburgh Steelers. I awarded 0.025 win to the Steelers, because anytime you can get a team like, you know, one of the premier teams or perceived premier teams in the AFC to lose a game, that could potentially help the Steelers down the line there. But another thing, I'll hop on my soapbox real quick. Kadarius Toney, that pick six. A fantastic recognition by Branch there, a guy that we talked about during the pre-draft process and athleticism, be able to get that tip ball and then take it to the house and all. But that ball went right off Tony's hands there. Mm-hmm. And you look, if you didn't watch the game and you look at the box score and look at the stat book on that and all like that, it shows one interception for Patrick Mahomes. That right out of the shoot there, that reconfirms my opinion that those kind of things don't need to be. Look, Elias, they can play God with sacks and quarterback hits and stuff that are kind of subjective and all along those lines. Just add quarterback interceptions to that. Either put it on the quarterback or put it on, you know, the eligible that he threw it to. And man, you have to wonder about Kadarius Toney at this point, right?
Patrick Mahomes still says he trusts him, but I'm not sure if you really can after a performance like that. That was the first interception Mahomes had thrown, I think, ever in a week one game. And what a crappy way to have that streak end. So I'm with you there on the advanced stats. Got to be able to, we can put a man on the moon, Dave, but we can't have advanced stats on when receivers are really the cause of interceptions.
And look, you even go back to last year with Kenny Pickett, right?
Yeah. First pass to Claypool.
And that one over to the sideline to Pat Freiermuth. Yeah, that ball mm-hmm. was a little bit high, but, you know, 8 times out of 10, does he come down with that? There are also a few, another one that went off, maybe it was one that Mitch Trubisky threw. I can't remember that went off, Deontay Johnson's hands and all like that. So, I mean, I if memory serves me, a few of those, you know, probably a good half of those interceptions that Pickett threw last season, you could probably put on, you know, and eligible and not him. But anyway, I don't want to go. We have a long season. We have a long season ahead for me to jump back on that soapbox. But I mean, that ball went off right off Tony's hands and into the hands of Brian Branch.
We'll keep fighting the good fight over here on Steelers Depot. But yeah, jam-packed show today. A little bit later on, we'll have a 49ers beat writer, Grant Cohn, who covers the team for Sports Illustrated. We'll talk to him and get his thoughts on San Francisco. We'll preview the game, make our picks, give our season predictions as well. But let's start with the most immediate news. Two things to talk about. Injury report here. But before we do that, Dave, Nick Bosa's playing. He's coming Sunday. He's got his deal, record contract, $50 million signing bonus, highest paid defensive player in NFL history. And so Bosa's done, and ready or not, Pittsburgh will see him this weekend.
Yeah, I saw the pictures, saw him get off the plane and all like that. No beer belly for him. So, you know, the only question, and we highlighted this, you know, in previous episodes here, you know, how much will he play? And Kyle Shanahan said, how many snaps are there in a game? And, you know, kind of inferring that, you know, he could potentially play all of them. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say he does not play 100% of the snaps. I kind of wonder if he'll play 90%, Alex. And, you know, even Steve Wilks, their defensive coordinator, was asked, I believe yesterday, and he, you know, he's not really sure and all like that. It doesn't sound like he did too much during their practice on Thursday. I would like to think that Fridays is just a glorified, whatever they get done on Friday is a glorified walkthrough before they jump on the plane and head to Pittsburgh here. So I think that's one of the interesting storylines, you know, obviously heading into this thing is, yeah, they got him under contract, and you obviously would like to have Nick Bosa playing on your team any snaps as opposed to not playing. But how much will he play?
It's a fair question, and I don't know the answer to that. I think it often seems to be, though, with these top-tier guys, it's more than you think. I agree, he's not going to probably play his completely usual complement of snaps, but, you know, Mike Tomlin made the point earlier this week that when T.J. Watt had his, granted it was a hold-in, but against Buffalo in 2021, ended up playing, I think, over 80% of the snaps and had a great day with two sacks. Now, I know Watt was around the team and going through individual drills. I assume that, you know, Bosa has been conditioning and working on the side, and so I think he's going to be in probably good enough shape and comparable to where Watt was a couple of years back. So I'm going to expect he's going to play more than you think and be happy if he falls short of that.
Right. More than anything, if you stay out of those third and long situations, you can help yourself too.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing you can do to ensure that Nick Bosa does not take over this game, regardless of the amount of snaps that he plays. So Bosa's done. Should mention Joe Burrow's contract is done as well. So Pittsburgh will see him in Cincinnati for a long, long time. A record deal, highest paid player ever, I guess, on a per year basis. So Burrow's deal again. We knew that was going to happen, but it's funny. It happened basically right at kickoff yesterday. So it was just peak NFL at around 8:15.
Yeah, kind of burying the lead, though, aren't they in doing that? Why not an hour before the game or something like that, you know, unless they literally just got that thing done. But, man, you got three quarterbacks in the AFC North now with average yearly values of what did I put out there, like $46 million or something like that. You know, three of the top, I think, seven highest paid quarterbacks in the league now reside in the AFC North. How will that you know, the old sins of the franchise quarterback that we talk about? Overall, I don't think it's going to impact the Bengals, at least. Look, the fact that Mike Brown paid somebody.
It's got to hurt him a little bit, you think. Right now,
yeah, but look, I mean, they have to spend the cat, you know, as we talk all people still accept the fact that teams have to, you know, over a 3-year span, spend 90% of the cap in cash. And if you have a franchise quarterback that you think can make you compete year in and year out, you're going to pay top dollar for that. He's going to be a high market value deal, but it's better than not having one. Right?
For sure. Yes.
So I know the narrative right now with probably fans of the Steelers is, aha, you know, the old Bart, you know, Bart Simpson, you know, aha, you guys this money. Well, the money just gets redistributed is what it is. Now, sure. Will it impact the team like the 49ers potentially in free agency moving forward? Yeah, it's possible, but I would imagine, you know, that, there's going to be some restructures with Burrow and all like that and move money. I mean, the Steelers navigated through it, didn't they? You know, and it's all relative to, the time and the cap percentages. So yeah, astronomically it's, you know, 40 something, you know, new money average of over 45 million and all like that, but it's all relative, to what the cap is at the time. You know, 4 years from now, we're going to think, right, man, looks like a bar. Just look at TJ Watt's deal right now, you know, when compared to Bosa, you know, but at the time TJ Watt became the highest paid player. It's all about redistributing, making sure you're spending your cash wisely, because a lot of times you don't have choice about whether, you know, how these guys are going to get paid top three money when come time for top player to get paid. It's just how are you able to redistribute what's left of your cap/cash to other players and making smart decisions with it. Are you going to have to pay other players along the way? Yes, but you just got to be wise in doing so and hope that the guy doesn't get injured or isn't a bust, or you didn't overpay and, you know, not getting the production out of it. I mean, it's the same with all 32 teams across the NFL, right?
Sure. And as the cap rises, as it will over the years, that will be a smaller and smaller percentage of what Burrow gets paid relative to the cap. And that, as you said, it's going to make it look, you know, look at Patrick Mahomes' deal, which was insane at the time. Now it feels like, hey, Mahomes is pretty cheap right now. They may have to redo that deal. I don't know how they're going to handle that, but that's how these things go in a couple of years.
Right. And you are now in the first year of the new 3-year cycle and all this. So the Bengals get a big chunk of that cash out of the way this year. I would imagine, you know, especially the third year of this, they'll probably be a lot tighter with the cash, because they will probably have met the thresholds of the 90% rule by then.
Right. My last note on Burrow, my favorite part of the contract is on the guaranteed money. It's $219.01 million. That 0.01 must have been the sticking point to get that deal done. I just love the little quirks of these contracts.
Yeah, it's fun to watch these, you know, to go from this part to actually see the layout and then, you know, the kind of the rolling option guarantee bonuses. You go back to that Mahomes deal and all like that. But anyway, that's Bengals, and nobody wants to hear about that.
All right, let's hear about the Pittsburgh Steelers and their injury report coming out on Thursday. Two names have been on the injury report both Wednesday and Thursday. It's been Cam Hayward and Larry Ogunjobi. Ogunjobi's been limited both days with that foot injury, that right foot injury he suffered in training camp. Hayward on Wednesday was listed limited for rest and then did not practice Thursday. They said stomach. Does that mean injury or illness? It's hard to say for sure, but Hayward's been talking to the media, was on Good Morning Football this morning. So I'm going to, I think, fairly safely and confidently assume he's going to play on Sunday.
Yeah, someone tweeted me bubble guts. Just put old man in there. In the injury report. Look, obviously, in the past, people have cropped up on injury reports, and we said, "Oh yeah, we know he's going to play," and all like that. You get to Sunday, and he's inactive. I'm going to go out on a limb here again. Two out on limbs already in the first 15 minutes of the podcast here, Alex. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Cam Hayward plays against the 49ers and plays a lot on Sunday.
I'll walk with you on that one there, Dave. And Ogunjobi, they should play. Now, how many snaps will he get and the effectiveness? And we have concerns about his health and he's always got something he's dealing with, but I think he's going to be out there this weekend too.
Yeah, that would be my guess as well too. The only this goes back to the conversation of back when they signed him to that contract mm-hmm. they did earlier. Look, I did not have this team re-signing Ogunjobi during the offseason. Said that before free agency got started. Once they did, I was a little bit surprised at the contract. However, if you want to boil this contract down with Larry Ogunjobi, they really just signed him to a one-year, $12 million deal. If you want to be blunt about it, I just wrote about this. We talked about it the other day. They have a big decision with him in March of 2024 when it comes to his roster bonus and all like that. So you want to talk about decisions and spending money that maybe you could potentially have spent elsewhere. This is probably one specifically that I think it's going to be clear either was a good decision or it was a bad decision, and it will probably be mostly related to his health and specifically the health of that foot or not. Do we expect him to be 2021 Larry Ogunjobi before that foot injury? Man, it'd be nice. I mean, if he is, then you can say, man, what a bargain that was. However, what if he misses? What if he misses two or three games? And what if it's a duplicate season of last year? Is that enough to justify 1 year, $12 million? And more specifically, does it justify keeping him past March of 2024?
They're fair questions. The issue with Ogunjobi, he's generally been available. It's not like he's missed a lot of time. He didn't miss much time last year in terms of actually not dressing, but in terms of the effectiveness of it. And does he get through practice? And is he not 100% for the game? And you see the impact that that has. He's a talented guy. Our issue when the contract was signed was not, he's not worth the money and he's not capable of being a starting caliber defensive lineman. No, I think he's a really talented guy and his highs are extremely high, but you get so much inconsistency probably due to the health. And as you get older, the health generally does not get better. And that's the concern there. And that concern continues.
It is a duplicate. How would you rate a duplicate of his 2022 season? If that's what happens,
if he has 1.5 sacks, it's hard to justify keeping that guy around.
I mean, obviously you can't measure it all by sacks, but you would expect him to have more than that, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, they're fluky, but if you ask me the duplicate, he had a sack and a half last year. He was, he had more pressure than that sack number might indicate. But, if you're only getting three sacks in 2 years for a starter, you're paying pretty good money to in a pass happy world. That's below the line, as Mike Tomlin would say.
And look, with that murderer's row that you have lined up there on paper to start the season and all like that, there are going to be opportunities for him to win and win a lot. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. But I do expect Ogunjobi to play. We'll get the final injury report on Friday. Although in this day and age, typically on Saturday, you get adjustments and upgrades and downgrades. So it's never really official until I feel like kickoff actually occurs. On the 49ers end, it's a more colorful, certainly longer list. But I think the general trend is this team is getting healthier and they're not going to be as kind of pieced together as we thought they might be at the start of this week. George Kittle, he's been limited with the groin injury, but I have a feeling he's going to play. Their kicker, Jake Moody, probably is going to play in this one. Nick Bosa, of course, is going to play. Brock Purdy is going to start. That's never really been in doubt. Even somebody like cornerback Charvarius Ward, who did not practice with a heel injury. The D coordinator, Steve Wilks, saying that he expects him to play. So they basically should have all their guys in this one.
Yeah, the painted picture probably looks better than when you open the cans of paint.
it's a little Tomlinism. I like it. A little spin.
You know what I'm saying? You haven't lived some. Wait till you get a wife and all like that. And you have to paint. And you have to choose paint and all like that.
I'm gonna stay single just for that, so I never have to paint.
And you think the paint looks good with this swatch up on the wall and. You finally paint the whole room like that. And you say, damn, that doesn't look as good. But in so many words, it didn't look as promising to them kind of heading into all this. But I think by the time the game rolls around, they're going to have the people that they want on the field.
Yeah, now again, snap counts may be a bit limited, but I think even a guy like Ray-Ray McCloud may play in this one. And we thought he was going to for sure miss this game when he broke his hand or wrist or whatever it was reportedly going to miss 2 months, and he's been limited and he may go in this game. So overall, they're in better shape than we expected. All right, Dave, let's get into some more Steelers talk here. Players speaking to the media, but I think the most headline-y, that's a word, comments so far have come from Patrick Peterson, not speaking to reporters, but on his podcast, the All Things Covered podcast, with his cousin and former Steeler Bryant McFadden. And we wrote about this yesterday, Peterson saying the 49ers offense has tells. And Bryant McFadden asked Peterson, do you have the cheat code on this offense? And Peterson said, when I get my pick Sunday, we'll talk about it. And as you expect, that certainly drawn a bunch of headlines. That word got back to Brock Purdy, who really didn't say much about it, just said, you know, complimentary things. Peterson is a great player, said, we'll see. And that was kind of all that he said there. But Peterson making some waves. What do you think of those comments?
I believe they've seen something. And look, I mean, if you study the tape long enough, you could probably say that going into every game, right? Against every team.
Including about Pittsburgh, every offense, defense has tells and a personality.
So I don't, you know, I think he said, and kudos to him. Sometimes you just get the vanilla stuff. Kudos to him for saying things that a lot of players probably wouldn't say. Let me tell you, he said, when I get my pick, I'll tell you about it. I hope he gets his pick, because I want him to talk about it, what he saw, so we can go back and learn from it, you know?
Yeah, no, I would love that. So I guess that's the question. And I'm with you. I'm in the camp of, you know, I want guys to be honest and not just say all the cookie cutter stuff for my own personal interest, because it's certainly better to write about that. So some people take, you know, umbrage with that and say Peterson shouldn't say these things. And if you have a bad game and Purdy throws a touchdown on you, then you're just kind of adding some bulletin board material. And so some people will take that track, which I understand, but I could appreciate a guy, you know, giving you more than just a standard boilerplate answer.
Right. Look, I he's a veteran. He's seen a lot. There is probably a couple of things on tape that he's seen.
This offense, and we'll talk about it more, but this offense for San Francisco is not hard to figure out. They're pretty, they have a clear personality. They just want everything to look the same. They don't have a ton of concepts. It's just trying to marry those concepts well out of different personnel groupings, out of different formations, and just a lot of window dressing to try to move your eyes and slow you down. But their offense is not anything that's ridiculously over the top.
The thing, and it goes back to several things we've talked about offensive coordinators over the year. You can have, you know, your menu of plays can be small, but can you run those plays out of different looks, different personnel groupings, different formations, and achieve what you want to achieve? The more you can make the same things look different, you're not going to have as many tells probably.
Right. That is the chess match. And that's what the 49ers have done super effectively. And that'll be Pittsburgh's mission to stop. So speaking of coordinators, the Steelers coordinators, Terrell Austin defensively, Matt Canada offensively speaking yesterday, anything that really stuck out to you in a big way? Terrell Austin didn't say a whole lot, spoke about Desmond King, saying he's jumped on the moving train, not entirely sure of his plan, even if he'll play this weekend, but I think he'll probably dress, and how much he gets used and where he gets used is probably anybody's guess.
Who's that?
On Desmond King.
Oh, I missed it. Look, he's one of the guys that I wonder if he's going to get a helmet, you know?
Okay. So you're not sure, but I think he's going to play.
Okay. Well then I, if he does, then I wonder who's going to be the last inactive there.
Fair. I'm thinking Sullivan. I mean, he may sit because he did just get here, but I think he's a pretty heady guy.
Okay.
But we'll just have to see, because Terrell Austin is not saying much and didn't really say a whole lot out of that other than the standard got to tackle well. These 49ers skill guys, they are so effective after the catch. The 49ers as a team, they're built around short yardage and quick game and getting guys out there in space and doing damage post-catch. And so tackling, leverage technique, all those things will be really important overall. Anything from Matt Canada, Dave, that caught your ear?
Not overall, no.
Okay, yeah, he just talked about Darnell Washington ascending and still have to block, you know, Nick Bosa. They've been preparing for him. They have a plan, but, you know, everyone has a plan here. It sounds good on paper until you actually have to do it. What'd you think of, I know it's kind of low-hanging fruit, but Mike Florio's comment that, you know, if Kenny Pickett does well, could Matt Canada earn head coaching buzz in the 2024 coaching cycle?
Now you have fans really excited for the Steelers to have a great, great season, right? I don't think Matt Canada is going to be in line for a head coaching job. He needs to just keep himself in the offense, at least in the offensive coordinator category at this point.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I understood Florio's point that, you know, typically when young quarterbacks have success, teams start looking towards the coordinator and the quarterback coach for coordinator and head coaching roles. That's been a story that's been pretty laid out over the last many years. But Canada's 51. He's not this fresh-faced Sean McVay, Nick Sirianni type of guy that's, you know, 30-something years old and kind of this boy wonder type of feel. And I just don't see that happening with Matt Canada.
Okay. I agree.
All right, Dave, where to here? I think actually probably a good time to take a pause and we'll speak with Grant Cohen, who has covered the 49ers for quite some time. Let me pull up his Twitter handle here for you guys to follow. It's pretty simple, at Grant Cohen. That's C-O-H-N. He covers the 49ers part of Fan Nation on SI.com. So we'll take a pause and come back with Grant.
Okay, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And as promised, as we'd like to do before every Pittsburgh Steelers game during the season, have a beat writer who covers the Steelers' opponent for the upcoming game. And this week, the Steelers are obviously playing the San Francisco 49ers Sunday at Acrisure Stadium. And we are pleased to be joined by first time on the show, first timer, Grant Cohn. And Grant covers the 49ers. I've followed him on Twitter for a while here. You can follow him at Grant Cohn. That's C-O-H-N. He runs all49ers.com, part of the Sports Illustrated family of NFL websites. And I think you're going to enjoy Grant. He really tells it like it is. Grant, welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.
Man, you really built me up. I got to do my best today. I'm going to tell it like it is. How you doing, man?
Doing great. We are pleased to have you here, obviously kicking off the NFL season. And to let everybody know, this is obviously in Friday's podcast. We are recording this Thursday morning. So obviously ahead of the NFL season, kicking off Thursday night with the game between the Lions and the Chiefs there. Grant, busy last several hours for you, obviously, with the 49ers finally getting Nick Bosa signed to that monster contract. I think you had a little bit of a pushback on him to some degree with maybe, you know, they waited all this time and still ended up caving or something to that degree. So let's first and foremost, let's get your thoughts on the 49ers signing Bosa to this monster deal.
I mean, it's better than them not signing him. Like, if they were going to trade Nick Bosa, that'd be something you would do before the draft. So, like, that wasn't an option. And it just seemed like, why are they taking so long? It seems like with a guy like Nick Bosa, you either give him exactly what he wants or you trade him. How do you negotiate? What do you tell him? He was the defensive player of the year. You tell him, oh, you're injury prone, and just ruin the relationship forever. So they dragged it out and they dragged it out. And now we're like 3 days before the season starts and he's not even in California. And you're thinking, even if they do sign him, what is he going to be able to do? And they get him at the very last minute. And it's reported that they give him $34 million a year. Like a couple of days ago, they were saying, I don't know if the Niners are so comfortable giving him more than Aaron Donald. They'll make him the highest paid edge rusher of all time, but more than Aaron Donald. And then like the next day, it's like more than $2 million per year, more than Aaron Donald. So it feels like they tried to negotiate. They dragged it out. They wasted a month that he could have been there and then ultimately gave him like 95 to 98% of what he wanted. Maybe he wanted 35 and they like shaved him down to 34. It's like, at what cost? You could have had him in training camp. You have a brand new defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks. I don't even know if they've met each other yet. I know TJ Watt did a similar thing and came back and killed it, but he was there. Like Nick Bosa hasn't even been in the facility. He hasn't been in the meetings. I wonder how much he's going to play in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if it's just third downs, because would he even know his assignments on first and second? I don't know.
And that's kind of leading it. You kind of partially answered my question. I know Shanahan said, unless he shows up with a beer belly or something to that degree and asked how many snaps are there in a game. But yeah, you're right. You know, he hasn't been around the team all this time. And look, without a doubt, I'm sure he's probably kept himself in great physical shape. But nothing replaces, you know, being out there and kind of being in football shape. And you're right, a little bit different with TJ Watt, because it was kind of one of those newfangled hold ins, if you will, still doing conditioning on the side and getting the schemes and all like that. If you were to predict, you know, let's say it's a 62 snap defensive game for the 49ers on Sunday, give me a percentage of what you think he's going to play on Sunday.
I would think less than 50. I think more than 50 would be irresponsible. Most of the time he plays 75 plus, but I mean, he just flew out last night. Then he's going to fly to Pittsburgh. What's his endurance like? Seems like 20 to 25 would be ideal, but if the game is close and in the fourth quarter, he's probably going to be out there. It's going to be interesting to see from the Steelers' perspective. Like if the Niners just try to play Nick Bosa on third downs to sort of work around his lack of endurance, do the Steelers get a first down on third down and then go no huddle to keep Nick Bosa out there and test his endurance? Or do they say, hey, the Niners want to play Nick Bosa sparingly? Thank you. We'll take it. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
To flip over, Grant, to the offensive side of the football, obviously the quarterback situation, Brock Purdy should start this weekend. How has he looked through his rehab and recovery? Could there be any limitations, not from a snap count perspective, but just a schematic perspective? How are they going to handle Purdy in this first game back?
This is a really interesting topic. First of all, he in training camp didn't play particularly well. Like he threw a lot of interceptions in training camp and passes that were dropped by the defense. Then he went to the, and you're thinking like, okay, the Niners have a great defense. These guys coming off an injury. Okay, no big deal. Then he went to the Raiders for two joint practices, did it again. They picked him off a bunch of times, and the Raiders don't have that good of a defense. So I'm looking at him and I'm thinking like, do you have the zip you had last year? And even if it's comparable, is the book on him better? If you look at his passing chart, it's stark. Like he throws left. All of his best areas on the field are to the left. He rolls left. He throws left. He's not that good at throwing to the right. People know it. It's out there. Like, what are you going to do? What he did against the Niners in training camp was throw left and get picked all the time. So Pickett's a similar athlete. I mean, probably a better athlete, but a similar quarterback. Steelers have seen this. They haven't seen Purdy specifically, but if they're prepared for him, I'm really curious to see if Purdy's the real deal. Like Niner fans are celebrating right now. Like they already won the Super Bowl just because they got Nick Bosa signed. Like you're supposed to do that. The real question to me is Purdy. Guy's eight starts. He's 23 years old and everyone's expecting he's going to win the Super Bowl this year. Like, let's see what that arm really looks like. He played three drives in the preseason against backups. He hasn't faced anything like this Steelers defense in a long time. And the last time the Niners faced a defense like this on the road was in Philly, and they didn't make it through the first drive. Because the Niners will call these – I mean, let's see how arrogant their game plan is. If they don't really respect the Steelers front seven, they call these slow-developing seven-step drops from under center, either play action or not, and they ask Colton McKivitz or whomever to block TJ Watt, then the same thing's going to happen that happened to them in the NFC Championship game when Hassan Reddick ruined it. I'm really curious to see how the Niners protect Brock Purdy. They got to be really careful here. It's not a playoff game. It's week one. They got to get the ball out of his hands really fast all the time.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I was going to bring up Colton McKivitz. I think that's the biggest question mark, or one of them, at least offensively, replacing Mike McGlinchey. Guy's got, what, five career starts, former, you know, day three pick. Now he's going to have to take on TJ Watt in week one. What about McKivitz made this team so confident that he could be the guy to replace him? And how has McKivitz looked this summer?
I don't know why they're so, I mean, no disrespect to Colton McKivitz. They're paying him like $1 million. His cap is like $1 million this year. I think what they like about him is how cheap he is. I think they felt, look, Mike McGlinchey's not, I don't know why Mike McGlinchey got so much money from the Broncos. He's not good. He's really not good. And I think they felt, look, we've been working around Mike McGlinchey for years. McKivitz isn't that much worse. They're comparable. Like in 2021, McGlinchey went down and they replaced him with Tom Compton. And you could argue their run game got better and their pass protection was equally bad. So I think they're hoping that McKivitz, while he's not the run blocker that McGlinchey is like mentally tougher. I don't know, man. It just doesn't make any sense to me. He's like the cheapest right tackle in the league. They don't really take the position seriously. I think they think like, okay, we're a run first team. And when we do outside zone to the right, we have the tight end at the point of attack. It's really more about Kittle than McKivitz. Whatever, man. Like, there's going to be 5 to 15 plays a game that are third down or drop back, and he's going to have to be one-on-one against TJ Watt, and he can ruin the game for you. I don't get it. The Niners are very old school in how they build their team. They still look at it like it's 1997, and right tackle is not a premium position. Meanwhile, the rest of the league is paying right tackles like they pay left tackles. This has been one of the Niners' biggest issues. They have a great team, and they can put together a very expensive team because they don't spend on their offensive line, other than left tackle. They don't spend on quarterbacks. I mean, if you choose not to spend at those two positions, then yeah, you can get the highest paid middle linebacker and the highest paid running back and the highest paid running back wide receiver hybrid and the highest paid tight end. You could do all that stuff, but are you going to win a Super Bowl? I don't know. They haven't.
When you look at offensively and some of the pieces there, everybody knows, should know who Deebo Samuel is, a fine young player, and Brandon Ayuk's come into his own, might be a little bit underrated still, I think, maybe across the league at this point. Steeler fans are familiar with Ray McCloud's coming off that wrist injury, sound like he's going to go, but a lot of people probably don't know a lot about Juwan Jennings. And obviously I think the 49ers like to run a lot more heavy stuff than maybe, 11 personnel and all like that. But what's the 411 on Juwan Jennings?
That's a really interesting question. Juwan Jennings is like Kyle Shanahan's secret weapon. Like on 3rd and 7, he knows the defensive coordinator is thinking about anyone but Juwan Jennings. He's thinking about Ayuk. How do I stop Ayuk, Deebo, Kittle, and McCaffrey on the same play? And so what you'll have is Jennings in the slot running either, a 7-yard in cut or a 7-yard out cut. And a lot of times he's the primary receiver. They'll go to him a lot of times on that quick out or either one. I mean, he runs like 2 routes. He's like a tight end. He catches the ball in traffic. He breaks a tackle and he gets like 2 or 3 yards afterwards. He's really good. Really tough, 6'3", makes very difficult, zero fear, 210 pounds, kind of bullies DBs as a blocker. He's the Niners' secret weapon. They'll go to him in key situations. Like a lot of times in the past, Kyle Shanahan has trusted Juwan more than Ayuk or Deebo on gotta have it, gotta get open, gotta catch the ball plays. So 3rd and long, 3rd and whatever.
Do you think we'll see kind of, I mean, basically, what the MO has been on this offense with Purdy dating back, well, really Kyle Shanahan offense in general. In other words, are we going to get a lot of heavier looks? I mean, do you expect, unless they trail or get into a 2-minute hurry up situation here, that we'll see just, 2 wide receivers on the field along with, Kittle and either, Jusak or my boy Charlie. I mean, I was a big Charlie Warner fan coming out of Georgia, and he obviously is stuck. But do you see him using a lot of heavy formations in this?
Not necessarily. Like their tight end depth, to your point, is not there. They drafted Cam Latu in the 3rd round this year. He's on IR for the whole year. Charlie Warner, I mean, I don't know if he's ever caught a pass in the NFL. If he did, I don't remember it. Ross Dwelly is, I mean, he has good hands. You don't know who Ross Dwelly is. He's one of their backups, and he's just not much of a blocker. He's more of a receiving tight end. So, I mean, 21 personnel with Juszczyk will be out there about half the time. But I think they do like their wide receivers a lot. Okay. And I think what you're going to see with the Niners, it's going to be different than what they had with Jimmy. Jimmy's like the slowest quarterback in the NFL. No disrespect to Jimmy. He does what he does well. He's good in the shotgun. He gets the ball out of his hands quickly. But Kyle wants to be under center. He wants to do play action bootlegs. He wants to fake the outside zone to the right and boot left. And not that many quarterbacks are quick enough and good enough. A lot of quarterbacks can do it, but Jimmy couldn't. He couldn't really do that. He didn't have the quickness to roll out to the left and be effective. Brock Purdy is really good at rolling to his left. It's what he wants to do anyway. And you're going to see a whole lot of play action pocket movement that you didn't see in the past with Jimmy. That's the big difference between him and Brock. Also, Brock holds the ball a really long time. Like Kyle wants him to get rid of the ball quickly, but Brock likes to like ad lib and hold on to it like he's Russell Wilson. He doesn't have Russell Wilson's athleticism or deep ball, but he tries to play like he's Russell Wilson. It's kind of like Johnny Manziel. Like Brock Purdy, I don't know who he thinks he is, but his confidence is like, it really jumps off the screen. And I don't know how long it's going to last. People are skeptical. I'm a little skeptical, but right now, well, at least before the injury, he walked around the field like he was Russell, like young Russell Wilson. So we'll see if he still has that confidence after this surgery.
To go to the defense again, Grant, what's the book on Charvarius Ward? You know, paid him a good amount of money, last or two off seasons ago. Is he a top flight corner? I've never necessarily gotten that sense. Had a bunch of tackles last year. I think he's pretty aggressive against the run. Is this a top end dude or just kind of a middling guy that maybe they paid a little too much for?
I wouldn't say he's middling. He is good against the run. He's aggressive in man coverage. You play him in press man coverage against most wide receivers in the league, he's going to have the advantage. He doesn't intercept a lot of passes, but he'll break them up with his, you know, he'll play with his back to the play, man-to-man coverage trail, and he'll actually make plays on the ball, which isn't easy. He's 6'1". He's a big corner. That being said, like, he was really playing well early last year. Niners look like they are smart for the investment. Then they played Kansas City, his former team, and they kind of lit him up. And ever since then, I feel like he lost a little confidence. Like, he got lit up down the stretch last year. He gave up a long touchdown catch in the playoffs to DK Metcalf and was like not even close. He was just burned. And what's interesting is the Niners have his other cornerback who's young, D'Amador Lenore. He's in his third year. He's not making a lot of money. He's a fifth round pick. Down the stretch last year, especially in the playoffs, he was the better corner. Like, that was the guy you needed to worry about because he was intercepting passes and Ward was not. So I'm curious to see if that carries over. Lenore is the one who's really been improving, got a lot to prove. He'll play outside in the base defense, and I think they're going to be moving him in the slot and nickel. So watch for him. He used to be number 38. Now he's number 2. I think 7 is the guy I'd look at to go after. 7, Ward.
Okay, gotcha.
Also, mm-hmm. in nickel, like, whoever the third corner is going to be, like, you could move Lenore to the nickel, what they want to do, and then put Ambry Thomas or Samuel Womack out there. You got to test those guys because when they get beat, they get beat deep. And then if they keep Lenore outside and bring in Isaiah Oliver for the slot, like, he had the worst training camp preseason on the team. Like, he played himself off the team, but they gave him a 2-year contract with like $3 million guaranteed and kept him. But you could argue that he was so bad, he shouldn't even be on the roster. So if he's on the field 26, like, that's a green light. I'm curious to see how the Niners handle that nickel defense.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh's going to come out in 11 personnel, and they need more explosive play, so they're probably going to test that. My last question for you, Grant, and I'll let Dave close things out. Just a big picture question, and I know it's week one. Who knows how the season will go, but what's either your expectation or the general expectation for the 49ers this year? Is anything other than making it to the Super Bowl in a weaker NFC a disappointment? I know that's an incredibly high bar. Only one team in the NFC gets to go there, but is it basically a Super Bowl or bust type year for this team?
I think so. I think this is the closest I can remember to a team being in like a true Super Bowl or bust situation where like people could get fired if they don't at least reach the Super Bowl, because they've been so close for so long and their core is getting older and like they've botched, like, despite having such a good team, they kind of look dysfunctional. Like, they threw away 3 first round picks on Trey Lance. They didn't know what they wanted. They never really gave him a chance. They thought they wanted him. They realized they didn't. So that could have been Micah Parsons. That could have been all this depth that they don't have anymore. So if they have injuries and fall off, they can't say, oh, well, we had injuries. It's like, yeah, well, you would have had depth and people to replace them, but you threw that valuable draft capital away. Also, you said you wanted Sam Darnold more than Trey Lance. So if Brock Purdy's the real deal. You said Sam Darnold's like could be the next Steve Young. So it seems like you have the exact team you want. Kyle was always sort of playing it cool, like, oh, you know, we have Jimmy Garoppolo, but I really wanted Kirk Cousins. Or he never really tied himself down to a quarterback. Now he's tied down. He likes Brock Purdy. They have the exact team they want. They've been building it for 7 years. Like, the NFC isn't good. Why are you not going to make it to the Super Bowl this year? You have the best coach, apparently. I don't see what the excuse is. Niner fans have been really patient. We'll see how the season ends up, but if they go one and if they don't make the playoffs, if they make the playoffs and lose in the first round, I think you're going to see like a really angry, disappointed fan base. I don't know what Steeler fans are like, but Niner fans,
I mean, similar.
It's been since 1995 since they won a Super Bowl. They won 5 in like a 15-year stretch, and then it's been nothing since I was 7. Not that I'm a fan, but it's been a long time, and I feel like it's kind of a salty fan base.
Well, Pittsburgh hasn't won a playoff game since 2016, so we'll join you in the saltiness because both teams I think are looking to break those droughts. Dave, go ahead.
Grant, I think it's fairly easy to connect the dots here with Steve Wilkes coming in and all like that. And, you know, obviously with kind of the recent history of the 49ers running a lot of zone, and Wilkes has a lot of history of zone. So I would expect that we'd see a lot of zone in this game. I think last year in that game against the Panthers, Wilkes really tried to stack the box quite a bit and, you know, forced maybe Kenny to try to throw the football. Are you seeing that? Is that going to be the attack this time around? And don't, you know, make Kenny kind of attack those zone areas and not give him too many opportunities on, because Kenny's not afraid, we've learned already, to take those one-on-one shots on the outside against, you know, man coverage there. But it doesn't sound like the 49ers personnel, and look, Hufanga, that's a fantastic player to watch, but that's a whole, we could do a whole nother 30 minutes on him, I think. But are you expecting a lot of zone in this, and basically make Kenny Pickett make the right decisions here?
That seems like it would be the smartest thing to do. I mean, you have Nick Bosa. I mean, think about it. They've had Robert Saleh and D'Amico Ryans the last 6 years. Those two play callers are fairly conservative. They mostly rush four. They mostly play zone. They might rush five on some third downs and have some specialty pressures, but essentially it's not a lot they're doing. Now Steve Wilkes wants – how's he going to be different? Are the changes he's going to bring to this defense, are they going to be changes to the defense? I don't even know. We haven't seen him game plan for anyone yet. It's going to be really interesting. What I did see him against Brock Purdy in the Niners first team offense in training camp was he would bring a lot of five and six man pressures on third down and try to force Purdy to take those shots one-on-one down the sideline, because really Purdy, that's not his game. Maybe to the left, but not to the right. I don't know about Kenny Pickett, but we'll see how much respect Steve Wilkes has. You said they faced him last year, right? So how did Steve Wilkes approach Pickett last year?
Yeah, they really crowded the box quite a bit. Okay. You know, well, okay. that was the Mitch Trubisky game, though. I believe.
Okay.
Because I think Pickett missed that one because of the concussion from the week ahead of there. So really, this will be the first really good look, I think, of Pickett against Steve Wilkes here. But all right, one. Before I get your prediction here, the other thing that I had on my mind was yards after the catch here. Obviously, the 49ers real good. Mike Tomlin highlighted that during his press conference, and with good reason. One of the big things the Steelers need to do this year is be much better after the catch. Is this game going to come down to the yards after the catch situation here? Because it feels like this is going to be a tightly contested game. Vegas obviously agrees, even though the 49ers like two and a half point favorites. But is this a yards after the catch and turnover game?
No question about it. If you're going to beat the Niners, you got to not let Deebo Samuel break a ton of tackles, because Brock Purdy really doesn't push the ball down the field. Like, it's kind of a pejorative out here, and some fans get upset, but he's a dinker and a dunker, like extraordinaire. He has the weakest arm of any starting quarterback in the league. What he does is he moves around a lot and then throws little short passes, and he throws to Christian McCaffrey all the time. He's a check down extraordinaire. So the thing about the Niners, they're the best yards after the catch players in the league. You got to be able to tackle them. It seems like the Steelers have a good defense that can make those tackles. Like, you have the run defense to set the edge. You're probably going to do a good job against Christian McCaffrey in the run game, but can you stop Deebo and McCaffrey as receivers? If you can, then the Niners probably score only about 19 points. If not, they could run it up on you and score 30-35. I mean, it's all about tackling. They turn the game into a tackling contest. Most teams don't.
All right, Grant, as an outsider, we'll finish you up with this. Obviously, you follow all of the NFL. I know you pay attention to the Steelers, too. What are your thoughts on the 2023 Steelers, and how about a prediction for the Sunday game, if you wouldn't mind?
I like the Steelers. I think they have – they're a very consistent team every year. They don't change very much. They have a consistent philosophy, consistent scheme. They're a solid team. They're always ready to play early in the season, as opposed to the Niners, who usually get going in November. That being said, I feel like they're still sort of building. They're still kind of young. And the Niners are like one of the more established veteran teams in the league. I like Kenny Pickett, but he kind of reminds me of Brock Purdy. Like, I feel like if they redrafted the 2022 draft, those two would be taken kind of similarly in similar spots. I think the Niners should win this game, but just because they're more talented than Pittsburgh right now. But at the same time, this is a team that historically started slow. They did not play well in the preseason. They had this whole attitude that kind of felt like all offseason, like, we'll be there. We'll show up week one. Bosa's not here. He'll show up week one. If they just show up to Pittsburgh in that environment, they're going to lose. So let's see. Like, they have this wave of emotion that Nick Bosa is back, almost like they traded for a player, which is kind of hilarious to me. Like, he's supposed to be there. But, yeah, I think the Niners should win this game, but they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable.
You got a score?
24-21.
Okay. All right. So they just do barely cover.
Just
there.
Enough. Just
all
enough.
All right. Grant, look, fantastic. Enjoy following you on Twitter. Let's see. All49ers.com, right? And Grant.
It's si.com/NFL/49ers.
Okay. All right. And yeah. It's Grant Cohn on Twitter. GRANTCOHN. Grant,
yes, it is.
We appreciate having you being a first timer on the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex. Enjoy your trip out to Pittsburgh and enjoy the game.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on.
And welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And again, our special thanks to Grant Cohn for coming on and giving his insight on the 49ers. Be sure to follow him at Grant Cohn. That's COHN. And tell him thanks for coming on the podcast, Dave. Good stuff from him.
Yeah, 49ers guys are usually hard to come by, as we said during that interview and all. So I was glad. And look, he's very outspoken when it comes to some of the things that go on, you know, that go on with that organization and all. You know, he talked about how he wasn't really a huge fan of how they kind of handled the whole Nick Bosa thing and all like that. But, you know, when it's all said and done, he picked them to win the game, right? So he obviously thinks that this 49ers team can compete in 2023 and with good reason and all like that. But it always is good to get the outside perspective like that from someone that's up close with the team.
All right, Dave, let's give our perspective now on this game before we make our picks in a little bit, starting with that 49ers offense. And their personality is, you know, run heavy, stretch zone, boot, play action, again, marrying run concepts, pass concepts, things looking the same. It's pretty West Coast, a lot of under center, even more traditional 5-7 step drops, horizontal crossers, that type of stuff. So that offense, it's talented. It's good. It's really sound schematically. That's the biggest challenge. But as Patrick Peterson said, there's probably a level of predictability in terms of what they like to do.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, get them kind of out of their comfort zone as best as you can. Stopping the run game on early downs. And, you know, going to probably see a lot of Kyle Juszczyk in this game. I'm interested. Brock Purdy had a hell of a damn, you know, season there, but overall, and I think, who was it, that said, you know, there's enough tape on him, at this point. I'm not so sure that once the good thing with him is there's not a lot of tape on him right now. So you haven't had to see him in a lot of, I don't think, overall kind of adverse situations there. I want to get him in as many opportunities where, you know, he's going to throw the football, know that he's got to hold on to the football, because like it or not, he's still got to be thinking about what went down early in that game against the Eagles, right? The Eagles really were getting after the quarterback early in that game. The way I think that you make him make mistakes is just get him out of that really structured offensive game plan where, you know, he's able to get the ball out, make quick decisions and all like that. So the more that you can get him in the adverse situations where it's not, where he has to think and where he has to hold on to the football, I think you have the more potential to make something happen.
What do you think the key is to, I'll hesitate and say, and not say stop, because stopping is really difficult, but how do you slow down Christian McCaffrey? Because to do that with Purdy, that means slowing down this 49ers run game, which means slowing down Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. You got to get him down to the ground. That's for sure. Right away there. I mean, the guy is good out in space, and they will use him out in space. I would like to take my chances on forcing them more into the inside, I think, to be honest with you. I don't think you want to let a guy like that get on to the edge, because I think he is the guy that can, once again, if he turns the corner, you know, but within the same breath, I mean, he's established himself as a between the tackles runner as well too. So, you know, yada yada, keep stay sound in your gaps and don't try to do too much overall. He's going to have his 3, 4, 5 yard carries in this game, but you can't let him pop the 7, 9, 10, 12 yard runs, because those stack up over the game. And then, you know, he's obviously one of the better pass receiving running backs in the NFL on top of it. So, you know, you got to be able to account for him in the passing game.
Yeah, you do. I think the backside pursuit is going to be really important to try to eliminate those cutback lanes for somebody like McCaffrey. So, you know, I think Pittsburgh has two edge guys that are really good at that. Really, all their edge guys, I think, have proven that. But Watt and Highsmith, you know, the most. And I think Herbig and Colton have the mentality to squeeze the backside there. So I think that's going to be important. I think, yeah, up front, being gap sound, doing your job, is going to be really critical. I really want to see how Pittsburgh handles their two back. When Juszczyk comes in, you know, he can flex out wide. He can be in the backfield. I put in my scouting report today. We have scouting reports for myself and Josh Carney, Jonathan Heitritter. Please check those out on Steelers Depot. But they run weak side a lot. And what they do is, you know, they run weak side away from the tight end, but they'll do it out of two back. And so they'll help the fullback be that lead blocker running weak side and try to basically gain numbers that way, where they're running away from the strength, but they still have the lead blocker advantage. And so I think that's an interesting wrinkle that you don't see from a lot of teams. But just generally speaking, how does Pittsburgh handle their 21 personnel when 44 Juszczyk comes in? Could we see some big nickel in this game, that three safety package to deal with Kittle and deal with how multiple this team can be out of that 21 personnel, because they can split these guys out and Juszczyk can be a space player. He played over 500 offensive snaps last year. So I really want to see how Pittsburgh handles, you know, 21 personnel, because that may dictate a lot of what happens in this game.
Man, they've got a lot of weapons there, right? And even 80% Kittle, if that's what it ends up being, is a guy that can, well, we've already seen it. And not only that, you know, what he does as a blocker in the run game, you know, you want to talk about throwback tight ends. He's a difference maker when it comes to that. And that's obviously one of why he's regarded as one of the best in the NFL. Some of the things that we've talked about several times during the offseason of deficiencies that the Steelers have offensively, the yards after the catch and the explosive plays. If there's one thing that, and Mike Tomlin pointed this out, and you know, it's evident with guys like Deebo Samuel and McCaffrey and Kittle, is the yards after the catch. This, we could look at this after the game, and if it's lopsided with the 49ers, you know, obviously in the yards after the catch category, either they're going to have to limit what the 49ers do in the yards after the catch category to stay in this game, or the Steelers are going to hang with them when it comes to the yards after the catch in this game. And until we see it out of the Steelers offense, that increase that we've been calling for, you almost have to root for the side of limiting what the 49ers do in that. Man, Deebo Samuel is a much better what, you know, Juju used to give this offense, right? He can break tackles with the best of them, probably one of the better ones in the NFL at the wide receiver position, and deliver an explosive play that time. You know, especially when you get down in how many times have we seen over the years with Deebo down in, you know, in kind of the high red zone area, him be able to take a short pass and then 14 yards later he's in the end zone there. So one of the biggest things, and I think, you know, Cam Hayward's talked about this, obviously Tomlin talked about it, I think Terrell Austin talked about it, is they're going to have their completions, they're going to have their run successes in this game, but man, just don't let them kill you with like 4 point yards after the catch in this game. If you do that, I think you have a lot better opportunity keeping it close.
The disparity between the yards after catch for these offenses couldn't be more striking. San Francisco was tied for the league best in terms of yards after the catch per reception last year at 6.6, and Pittsburgh was dead last at 4.0. And granted, the offensive structure and the philosophy is a bit different overall, which kind of lends itself to more yak for San Francisco, less for Pittsburgh. But these numbers have to tighten up in this game, as you said. There's no doubt about that. The other thing, and it's a big picture thing, but it's really important, is the 49ers don't beat themselves. They really are a clean team. They only turned the ball over 17 times last year. That was third fewest in the NFL. Their 13 turnover ratio was the best in the NFL. So they just win the turnover battle. They don't hurt themselves, and that allows them to compete and ultimately win a ton of these games. So that's going to be the challenge. In terms of the pass game, I think when you talk matchups, you have to talk about T.J. Watt on Colton McKivitz, their right tackle, replacing the departed Mike McGlinchey, who signed with Denver in free agency. They've talked up McKivitz. They think he's ready to do the job. But of course, when you face T.J. Watt, are you ever really ready? So that's going to be, you know, we talk about Dan Moore in a core four versus Nick Bosa. I'm sure all San Francisco is discussing is Colton McKivitz versus T.J. Watt and all the plans of how do you slow this guy down with chips and alignment and slides. I mean, that's going to be the whole chess match.
Look, this could be a game. This T.J. Watt can turn the tide, you know, as he can in most any game. This is one of those things. I did that whole series this past offseason on the tackles that that T.J. Watt will face. McKivitz is one of those guys that you think that T.J. Watt can have a very solid, you know, of the guys on the list that, and here's the other thing, that Texans tackle, they're not going to have him, a couple of games from now on top of it. That was another one, I think that you kind of look forward to watching that battle. But, you know, on Sunday here, they're obviously going to give T.J. Watt a lot of attention in this game. So if they do that, I mean, T.J.'s still going to have his wins, you would think, overall. But it's not like you can put two guys on him every play here. So, you know, if T.J. can just have his I think he could have a big game. I think he could have a multi-sack game at that. I think the big thing is can he get that football out and make a big difference in a play that way? But, for the attention that he gets, somebody else has got to step up in this thing. And sure, they got a great, great tackle, obviously, in Trent Williams over there. Alex Highsmith's going to have his hands full. I found it quite curious at NFL.com with Carr, with David Carr, trying what's the matchup to watch? Had Trent Williams versus T.J. Watt. I mean, how does that one slip? Because Watt, they play different sides overall here, but Watt can be a difference maker in this game, especially against that right tackle. And once again, the attention that he gets should put the highlight. How many times have we talked about how deep this front is for the Steelers up front here, and that by having all those guys healthy, it's going to produce some very tasty one-on-one matchups for everybody else on that defensive line. So really the big focal point here is along with maybe getting your regular stuff out of T.J. Watt is what can someone else do on that line?
That's my concern, to be honest with you, because we know the 49ers are going to spend a lot of energy on trying to limit T.J. Watt, not stop him, but they're going to make his day difficult, as Pittsburgh, I'm sure, will try to do with Bosa and company. So you have Watt getting doubled and chipped and all that on that side. And then on the other side, as you mentioned, it's Trent Williams, the Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame left tackle, against Alex Highsmith. I mean, that's going to be a tough matchup there. So if Highsmith is struggling to consistently win on that side and Watt's dealing with all the crap he's dealing with on his side, where is that main source of the pass rush going to come from? Of course, you got Cam Hayward and Ogunjobi have to provide that along the interior. Maybe some more blitzing in this game. I think one thing I noted in my report, the 49ers backs don't really stay in to protect against the blitz. They go out there in the flats, and the calculation is, instead of having McCaffrey just stay in and pick up the linebacker, just go to the flat and we're going to throw to him hot and let him make plays in space, because he's a better receiver than he's going to be a blocker. He's more valuable in that sense. So can Pittsburgh come up with some creative blitzes that the 49ers might not account for, that might get home just in time to sack Brock Purdy? So I want to see that chess match between the 49ers throwing hot and Pittsburgh blitzing.
Okay.
What else do I have here for the 49ers? Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about Deebo Samuel and George Kittle, and rightfully so. They're fantastic players. But Brandon Ayuk led the team in receptions, in yards, and had a couple of touchdowns last year. He's another threat as well that does not get recognized enough. And so You got to account for Ayuk as well. Brock Purdy threw 4 interceptions last year, but all 4 of them, I think, were 15 plus yards down the field. And so if you can put him in those situations to throw deep, you can win. But if he's throwing short, if he's on schedule, they're moving the chains, and it's going to be tough for him to turn the football over. It's going to be tough to win a game in which the 49ers do not, you know, give the football away.
Going to have some, you're going to have some takeaways in this game here. And, you know, you mentioned Ray McLeod earlier. You know, we haven't really even focused on special teams yet. Ray McLeod, not the most sure-handed guy back there, even when he does have a healthy wrist.
True.
Right? You're going to have a takeaway or two in this game, I think, to win. I don't think you can have, and especially if the Steelers turn the football over, but I think if the stat sheet shows 0-0 in the turnover column, that might not be enough.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough to do. I don't know what the exact stat when the 49ers were even in turnover ratio, but I'm betting they didn't lose many games when that occurred last year. So any other final thoughts here for this 49ers offense, Dave?
No, I think we covered it.
All right, flipping over to the defense, and of course you look at that defensive line and Bosa playing, and they add Javon Hargrave to that mix. And so it's a unit that got after the quarterback last year that looks stronger this year. And so the big question is, Dave, off the top, how do you slow down Nick Bosa?
Baseball bat, maybe.
Legally.
Yeah. You're going to have to, all the things that you do with good pass rushers around the league. You're going to have to, and what, you know, the 49ers are at times going to have to do against TJ Watt. You're going to have to try to get an elbow into him. You're going to have to, one of the things, obviously, to try to slow Bosa down is get the ball out before he can even get to you. That might be the single biggest thing that we see with this offense. Because look, I think we expect Steve Wilks in this defense, just their MO over the years. Those two things specifically is to play a lot of zone type stuff, and you know, you're gonna have to be able to run the football good early. That's one thing that you can help. I want to make Bosa have to log as many snaps as possible. So the longer that you can extend some of these drives out, the more likely you are to get him off the field at certain points on top of it there. But in the opportunities that, you know, big passing downs and stuff like that, you're going to have to probably put a tight end on him. I would introduce him to Darnell Washington a little bit in this game, right?
Yep.
See how he likes to get leaned on by a big boy like that. Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of 2 tight end 12 personnel in this game. I think you're going to see that old bully ball mentality, at least early on, to see what they can get accomplished with that, not only in the running game, but potentially in the passing game as well. Well, too, the biggest thing to slow him down is wear on him, I think, with help and big bodies. And then the other thing is try to get the ball out as soon as possible and don't give him time to win.
No, I think you said it well. I think if he's playing more snaps than you think, if he's playing early on, you know, first and second down, 2 things I would do. A, run at him to try to wear him down a little bit, minimize, obviously, the pass rush threat, and then throw some screens his way, whether it's running back or wide receiver screens. Get this guy running, test that conditioning, maybe tire him out a little bit early, maybe, you know, force San Francisco to use him a little bit less than they may want to. So I think you got to, you know, like any good pass rusher, you got to really just kind of make his life tough to start and get these guys running and thinking and out of their comfort zone and just kind of set the tone early. So I'm with you on Washington, and it's still not easy to do. I think it's a big test for Dan Moore. You know, how does he handle speed to power? That's kind of always been his issue. He's gotten better at that, I think, this summer. But when you face Bosa, it's a whole new test.
And he's going to move around, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that can play both sides. You know, Myles Garrett's predominantly a, you know, right defensive end. Max Crosby, they'll see in week 3, he's predominantly a left defensive end. Bosa's a guy that can flip. I forget what side he plays more of, but in this game, he's certainly capable of facing either guy.
Okay.
Let's see, what else do we have here? I think one note I have in my scouting report is I might not be as heavy in this game as typically as I might be in others in terms of, you know, being 12 personnel and super, super big. I mean, you do want Washington out there maybe in some situations to chip and all that. But what I noticed on tape was when you come out heavy, especially, you know, 2 back and 13 personnel and those really ultra heavy packages, the 49ers will really crowd the box. They always want to be plus one in the box count against those heavy personnel. They always want to have one more guy, one more defender than you have blocker. Now, in more 11 personnel, things are a bit more spread out. Their box counts tend to be more even, six versus six, for example. So I may try to spread the field out a bit more to run because, man, Dave, that run defense for the 49ers is super, super tough. And they add Hargrave on top of that. They didn't allow a run last year longer than 25 yards. I mean, that's just insane. And they only allowed 23 runs of 10 plus yards last year. Also, the best mark in football. So how do you run on these guys for a Pittsburgh team that is going to hang their hat on how well they can run the football? That is the thing to watch.
Yeah, you're going to have to, once again, you're going to probably have to have the big bodies out there, right?
I don't know if you go the big bodies, though, because the 49ers,
I mean, I think you just muscle them up, man. If you're going to run the football, I think you've got to try to muscle them.
Okay. I think I would spread things out a little bit. I just have not seen success when teams go heavy, but I know that's Pittsburgh wants to be that. So it is a matter of, can you overpower them with your personality will be the question.
Okay. I mean, look, you're going to have to do a little bit of both, but I think where you have the ability to have really make a difference in, I mean, you go back. I mean, this isn't an explosive running team anyway. So, you know, I'm looking for the 7 yard runs, however you can get them. You know, the six or 7 yard runs, however you can get them. You've got Darnell Washington for this, you know, in my opinion, for this very reason. You've got guys like Sayamalo. You've made those changes, you know, up front there. You're going to have, you know, potentially your best offensive line overall as a whole in several seasons now here. So, I mean, you've got a former first-round draft pick in Najee Harris. It's time for those guys to earn their money. Once again, I think on early down situations, and look, it doesn't mean that you have to run out of that all the time, and you can on first down sometimes have the 11 personnel out there as well too. As we saw, your wide receivers have got to play their part in this thing and cracking and blocking out on the edge, because you're not going to have those explosive plays with a guy like Najee if you don't have some of those second level blocks.
Yeah, I think somebody like Allen Robinson is going to be really important in this game to crack some of these linebackers, maybe that defensive end occasionally on some of the toss games. So I think somebody like him could play a really key role in this one. Let me give you one very specific but somewhat bold prediction in this game. I think there'll be a read option where Kenny Pickett keeps the ball and picks up a first down on third and two or second and four, whatever it is. I noticed, and granted, this was without Bosa, and Bosa changes the equation, but twice in the two preseason games that I watched against Denver and the Chargers, there was a read option where one time Russell Wilson kept it, the other time the Chargers backup quarterback Easton Stick kept it and picked up a first down on a read option because the end crashed down and took the back and there was no one scraping over the top to replace. So Pittsburgh has slightly dabbled with that this summer, and I think they're going to bust it out on a, you know, key, call it third and two in this game.
Hey, you want to talk about something else to keep Bosa thinking and slow down a little bit? One or two of those a game to his side might keep him thinking, right?
You just hope he guesses wrong, because if he guesses right, then your quarterback's one-on-one right with Nick Bosa, and you better slide real quick. But yeah, I think all those things that just kind of slow him down, make this guy run and chase, become a little bit winded, those are going to be ways to attack Nick Bosa. And then in coverage, it's a solid unit overall. I do think they struggled more with bunches and stacks and switch routes. And so I think if Pittsburgh can do some of that, which I think Canada has done throughout the summer, 3-by-1, you know, bunch, you know, and switch release and those types of things, I think just how well can the 49ers communicate and pass that off on the road will be something to watch for.
Look, you know, against a heavy zone, you know, are we going to see anything more to the middle of the field?
I mean, hopefully. It just depends a bit on coverage. You know, it's hard to throw in Fred Warner's airspace, though. He had 10 pass breakups last year. Pittsburgh's inside linebackers combined had 9 pass breakups last year. So Fred Warner was outproducing the Steelers' entire inside linebacker group, which granted was not very good, but you get the point. So, you know, Fred Warner is one of those. He's the best coverage linebacker in football. He's a guy that can truly cover, you know, somebody down the seam and cover too. So he's a tough guy to throw on.
You know, look, and once again, this goes back to the yak. We've got to see this team have some yak.
You do, for sure, for sure.
And who was it? Dan Olszewski the other day said something to the along the lines of, look, regardless, once a quarter, you need to be able to get the football, take a deep shot down the field to George Pickens. Now, obviously, coverage is going to dictate a lot of that, right? What you see. Sometimes, though, it might... What about some back shoulders in this if they play a lot of zone? Could we see a lot of that Pickett to Pickens back shoulder stuff early on?
Yeah, you're going to throw that stuff on single high. So if it's going to be cover one or cover three, and generally more cover one where the cornerback is running and his back's kind of turned, then that's where you throw the back shoulders. So if you can show you can run the ball and force the 49ers to spin that strong safety down and play with an 8-man box, that's going to create one-on matchups at the outside, and that's when Pickett takes his shots to Johnson, but more particularly to George Pickens.
Okay.
I think the other thing to watch out for is just on third down, these wide nine alignments for Bosa, for these defensive ends and the games and twists, and they're going to mug the A-gaps, and they're going to force the O-line to pinch, and so it's something Pittsburgh, I think, has struggled with for the past couple of years, and I think every team struggles with it to some degree, but how do you handle on third down some of these more creative looks? I think they seem to be a bit more exotic this year under Wilkes than they might have been last year under D'Amico Ryans.
Okay.
And
you're going to need explosive plays in this game to win, plain and simple.
Yeah, you do. The one guy I want to talk about as well, no one talks about him. How about Tayshaun Gibson? I mean, 33 years old, had 5 picks last year, led the 49ers in interceptions. He's a veteran guy. He's played Pittsburgh before. Granted, not Kenny Pickett, but he was in Cleveland for a couple of years. He's got 3 career picks against the Steelers. So he's a guy that no one talks about because they're talking about Hufanga and they're talking about Bosa and Warner. But Tayshaun Gibson out there in center field, man, don't forget about him.
It's hard to watch him when Hufanga's on the field, though, because he's a super talented kid.
Yeah, I mean, he had 97 tackles last year, 4 picks, 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. I mean, he was kind of everywhere. But Gibson, I think, is kind of that just crafty veteran against a second year quarterback. You want to watch that matchup. So, any other thoughts here, Dave, on San Francisco offense, defense, special teams? We'll see if they have McLeod, if they have Moody for Pittsburgh. What does Calvin Austin do as a punt returner? Presley Harvin, can he flip fields? Field position will be important in this one. He did a great job of that this summer. So, kick returns, we probably don't expect a lot of action there, but other facets of this game will be, of course, important.
Yeah, well, how's the kicker situation going to play into this with kind of a bang? Look, he's not going to be out there if he can't kick, but obviously you're probably not as familiar with almost called it Heinz Field, Acrisure Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be something for Moody, his first game, assuming he plays, and we assume that he will. If he doesn't, though, it won't be a first game for Matthew Wright. He's kicked in this stadium right before, but I think that Moody is going to give it a go. But yeah, first game for a rookie kicker dealing with a quad injury. You're never quite sure what that's going to bring for your team.
And the other thing we talked about that Mike Tomlin highlighted the other day there is too, just do what you need, do your job when it comes to special team stuff and let the other team make the mistake. As we saw and talked about the other day, going back the last couple of week one games that the Steelers have had, they've had some special teams play in that there. Look, this is a winnable game for the Steelers, I think, overall, especially playing in your house. But I mean, without a doubt, too, this is still a very potent 49ers team, and there's a reason that they're favored.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why they went to the NFC title game last year and may have won had they not lost all their quarterbacks and basically played without a quarterback or one that couldn't throw for 3/4 of that game. So, I mean, it's winnable for Pittsburgh. I think every game on the schedule this year is winnable. I don't see one game where I sit there and go, as we stand today, obviously things can change, but I don't see one where you go, okay, they cannot win that game. They're going to be massive underdogs. It's going to take something absurd for them to pull out a victory. I don't see that on the schedule this year because the schedule is a bit lighter and this team is just better.
Right.
All right, Dave, before we get to our predictions for this game and for the season for Pittsburgh, let's hear from our friends over at MyBookie, who's, again, sponsoring the podcast. And we appreciate their support, and you'll hear from MyBookie every Friday on the Terrible Podcast.
That's right, Alex. As a bettor, you demand perfection, and MyBookie delivers. NFL, college football, and a brand new cash-out system give you options to bet and win all season long. First 2 legs of your parlay hit? Cash out early and use the funds on another bet or let it ride for a chance at a bigger payday. Join the MyBookie family for an entire season filled with odds boost, free bets, and super contests. This season has MyBookie has a no strings attached cash bonus that lets you deposit and withdraw quick. Use promo code TERRIBLE. That's promo code TERRIBLE at sign up and on a deposit of $50 or more, and you can receive up to $200 in cash instantly in your MyBookie account. You can bet your deposit amount once and you're all ready to cash out anytime again. And that's using promo code TERRIBLE to claim your cash deposit bonus. Let me read it again. Bet your deposit amount once and you're ready to cash out at any time. Again, that's promo code TERRIBLE to claim your cash deposit bonus now. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie. And to get to them, you go to MyBookie.ag. And once again, please, please, please use promo code TERRIBLE when you do sign up.
And we thank MyBookie for their continued sponsorship of the Terrible Podcast. Dave, we are both 0-1 to start the season, picking the Chiefs last night. I felt good about it. Had I realized that, yeah, Kadarius Toney just was incapable of catching, then I would have gone the other way. But we both start the season 0-1.
Yeah, what did we say? That line was out on that 4.5, I think, at the time on MyBookie there. Yep, took the L there. But I consider that buying the Steelers some help there.
For sure.
All right, is that tax deductible?
Check your account. Don't ask me. Let's make our week one picks around the NFL. Then, of course, we'll wrap things up with our predictions and analysis of Sunday's game between the Steelers and 49ers.
All right, Panthers at Falcons. Falcons favored 3.5 at home against a young led Panthers team.
Yeah, tough one here. Give me Atlanta. I think Bijan Robinson has a big game. Bryce Young maybe has a couple of rookie mistakes, but give me Atlanta.
I'll take Atlanta late at 3.5 as well, too. Houston Texans on the road against the Baltimore Ravens. What a big ask here. Ravens laying 9.5 at home.
Big line, but that Ravens defense that can be so creative, even though with some of the changes there against CJ Stroud, I got to go Baltimore.
That's a tough draw for the Texans. I'll take Baltimore late at 9.5 as well, too. Arizona Cardinals on the road at the Washington Commanders. Joshua Dobbs for the Cardinals at quarterback, I believe. Commanders laying 7 at home against the Cardinals.
I got to go Commanders, rooting for Josh Dobbs. I just don't know how Arizona's going to move the football. Trying to run on that, you know, Commanders front's going to be tough. They don't have the weapons in the pass game. I'm going Washington to win by 14.
Yeah, at some point, we're going to have to pick a dog here to cover, I think. But not this one for me either. I'll take the Washington Commanders late at 7. Bengals at Browns. AFC North battle to kick things off here. Browns are at home, giving 2 points to the Bengals. So Bengals minus 2 in this one.
So the Browns are underdogs in this one.
Right.
Wow. I mean, I'm going to go Cleveland in this one. Their track record against Joe Burrow is really good. Burrow's always had trouble against the Browns. I don't know if I love Cleveland for the year. You'll get my prediction here in a second. But in this one, I'm going to go with the Browns.
You think they upset them?
I do.
I don't. I'll take the Bengals later two there. Let's see. Titans on the road against the Saints in what should be an entertaining game. Saints at home laying 3 against the Titans. I have the Titans having a good season this year.
Ooh. Okay, I'm going to go Tennessee in this one. I think their run game with Derrick Henry healthy, I think he's going to be solid enough. So I'm going to go with the Titans.
Yeah, I'll go Titans as well, plus the 3 points. I think they win this outright. Jaguars on the road against the Colts. Jaguars is another team that should have a good season here. Jaguars laying 5 on the road.
Yeah, I'm all in on Jacksonville this year, Dave. I think they're going to be, they could contend for that number one seed in the AFC, to be honest with you. So Richardson, his first start, you know, going to be some good, going to be some bad, but overall, Jacksonville wins this one.
Yeah, I'll take Jacksonville, lay those 5 points as well, too. Buccaneers on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings laying 5.5 against Baker Mayfield's bunch.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Minnesota in this game, I think, pretty easily.
I'm going to call this a field goal game. Vikings win, but give me the Buccaneers plus that 5.5 here. The Rams, I tell you who's probably not going to have a good season this year. It's probably the Rams. I look back at my predictions from last year. I had the Rams in the Super Bowl last year, and they went, what, 5-12? So, yeah, you know, experts aren't always experts. Los Angeles Rams on the road against the Seahawks. Seahawks laying 5 at home.
Yeah, I mean, in Seattle, no Cooper Kupp. I'm going with Geno Smith and company.
Yeah, it's tough to pick the question is what's the end score and can the Rams cover? I say they don't. Give me the Seahawks late of five. New England Patriots at home against the EAGLES Eagles. Did I spell that right? EAGLES Eagles. Patriots plus four. They're giving points. They're not you know, Eagles coming in there obviously favorites. Eagles laying four.
You know what? I think Belichick finds a way to keep this one really close. I'm not high on New England for the year. I think they lose, but only by a field goal. So I'll take New England.
All right. We're going to differ on this one. I have the Eagles winning by a touchdown in this one. Dolphins at the Chargers. Chargers laying 3 points.
Oh, man. That's going to be a really good game. A couple of great quarterbacks. I think the Chargers offense is being retooled to not be so conservative. They add somebody like Quentin Johnston. This is in Miami or in L.A.?
L.A.
Man, this one's really tough. The Chargers are just the Chargers, though. Give me Miami.
I'll take the Chargers. I'll lay those 3 points. Raiders at the Broncos. Broncos laying 3.5. What's going on with Chandler Jones? Whew.
Yeah, that's a very delicate situation, to say the least, over there. Not quite sure. Can't really speak to it. I don't think Sean Payton's the savior, to be honest. Not that I'm super high on the Raiders, but give me Las Vegas.
I'll take the Broncos to cover at home to open a season. I'll lay the 3.5 there. Packers on the road against the Bears. Bears favored by one as the Jordan Love against the Packers, with the Jordan Love era getting underway here.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago's skill guys look a whole lot better. Justin Fields should take a jump there. But, you know, Chase Claypool has not won a game as a Bear yet. I don't think that streak ends in week one. Give me Green Bay.
Oh, man, we're going to differ on a few. I'll take the Bears to win by a field goal here. I'll lay the 1 point. Dallas Cowboys on the road against the G-Men. Dallas favored by 3.5 on the road against New York.
The Giants are just coached well. I mean, I don't, you know, necessarily love the overall talent there, but yeah, this one's really tough overall. NFC East matchup. It's a coin flip for me. My gut says Giants, so I'll say Giants.
Okay, I'll take the Cowboys late at 3.5 points. Well, we're going to come out and shoot one of us.
Yeah.
Maybe on top of the other one here. Buffalo Bills laying 2.5 on the road against Aaron Rodgers and the Jets.
My very hastily made Super Bowl prediction was, what, Eagles over Jets. So I guess I should stick with that here early. No Von Miller, that's going to help out that Jets O-line. Give me New York.
I'll take the Bills to cover 2.5 on the road here. And then we have, I think that's it. That's the slate other than the Steelers game. All right, should we talk about the Steelers first before we and give our prediction for the season before we cover the game? Or do you want to do the game line first?
Let's go the other way. Let's start small to big. Let's start week one, and then we'll give our season predictions.
All right. I think this is a very winnable game. The line right now on my bookie is the 49ers by 2.5 overall here. I think this is obviously a because everything that we've seen up until this point, I think this is a very winnable game for the Steelers. The last 2 years, I have picked against the Steelers in week one. And they've won both those games. I believe they were underdogs in both of them. I don't think I think this is the closer line, though, of these last three week one games or overall. I really want to pick the Steelers here, but I am in the mode of, okay, I'm impressed with everything about this team at this point, but now I want to see a regular season game and you beat a good team. I'm picking against them, Alex.
Ooh, I didn't think you were.
Yeah, and I'm picking against them on this. And not only that, I think the 49ers cover this one. I'm going to go 23-20, a 3-point game in this one with the 49ers with the last-minute field goal to win it.
I've gone back and forth on this one a lot, Dave. I'm really happy with where Pittsburgh is at, but I recognize that, you know, there's going to be some adversity, and the 49ers are a really good team, and they're getting a bunch of their guys back that we weren't sure if they were going to play in this game, like Bosa, like Kittle, like their kicker, Moody, and of course, Brock Purdy's going to start. You know, I at the start of this podcast, just kind of talked about I was leaning San Francisco, and honestly, I had 23-20. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to flip the score here, Dave. I'm going to say Pittsburgh 23, San Francisco 20. They found ways to win week one. These week one games, they were doing it on the road. Now they're at home. Give me Pittsburgh.
look, this is a week one game, and obviously you want them to win. And, you know, I think it's a measuring stick game of a sense. And, yeah, the season's not over if you lose this game. But let me tell you, if they do win this game, you want to talk about – this is one of those – there's like four or five games on this schedule that I think, man, could really take a what I think is going to be a very good season for this team and make it even better. In other words, put them in a category where they potentially win 12, 13 games like that. If you can win one like this at home against a good 49ers team, especially with kind of the way the front half of the schedule looks for this team and obviously stay healthy in the process, this could signal that this could be a signal that maybe as pumped as, you know, as many people jumping on the bandwagon of the Steelers as of late, especially on a national media level, maybe it wasn't even enough there. So I do think it's a winnable game for them. I think it would be a statement game if they do win it. I just they're going to have to prove it to me. And look, I mean, I'm 0-2 in the last 2 week one games, so maybe this is a maybe I can get credit for a reverse jinx here.
One of us will be right, at least I assume in this one. But I think for the season, people will not be happy to hear that from you, Dave. But give us your season prediction, because I think people will like this one a bit more.
Look, I have I've moved by about a full game on this as the offseason has wore on. First and foremost, as we've said several times, I don't think you could have mapped this out, this complete offseason, preseason, everything leading up to this week one game. I don't think you could have mapped it out any better for this team. This team is talented. This team is deep. It's a much better team, because a year ago, well, I had this team going 8-9. I was not bullish at all on the 2022 team. I don't see how you can look at this team on paper as we sit here right now and not, and look, they went 9-8 last year, and yeah, it wasn't extremely hard gauntlet to close the season out with, but they won those games, and they did so with the fact that they're able to get their young quarterback experience and get him progress along the lines, had some game winning drives along the way on top of it. You fast forward into the offseason, obviously going into this season at all, Kenny Pickett looks really, really comfortable. Goes without saying, it was a flawless preseason, you know, for this team. I have found myself, for a while there, I was thinking, okay, this team will be, you know, maybe one game better, something along those lines, when it comes to that. But I have got this team 11-6, Alex. So I got them being two games better than last year's team. Overall, the biggest snafu that I wrote about last night was the fact that the AFC North is also tough. Along with those games, some of those games like against the 49ers, the Patriots, even though I don't think the Patriots are going to be all that this year, the Jaguars, the Tennessee game in this this year's schedule, there are kind of ones that you kind of circle and go, all right, what exactly can happen? Because there's a lot of games early in this season, the first six overall. I had this team going, losing to San Francisco and then reeling off five straight wins. So I have them going 5-1 in their six, because I think it sets up that good for them. I have them losing to Jacksonville. I have them beating Tennessee and Green Bay. My only question is what can this team do in the all-important AFC North? That's going to be the difference in this team finishing second in the AFC North or potentially winning the AFC North. I have them going what they did last year, 3-3 in the AFC North, splitting with every one of the three teams there. If they better that prediction of 3-3 in the AFC North, then look out. This team could win the AFC North. Could be your top three seed, I think, in the playoffs here. But my prediction is going 3-3 in the AFC North, finishing with an 11-6 record overall, going 5-3 on the road, 6-3 at home. overall. I have them making the playoffs as the number 7 seed in the AFC as a wild card team. I have them winning their first playoff game since 2016, upsetting the Buffalo Bills on the road. But then I have them bowing out in the divisional round against the Chiefs overall. Unequivocally, I am expecting this team to make the playoffs and win a playoff game, if not a couple of them here. Mm. This team is talented enough, in my opinion, to do that at this point. I will be highly disappointed. I mean, goes without saying, be disappointed if this team doesn't make the playoffs. But I'll be probably about as equally disappointed if they get in and don't win a playoff game. That streak needs to stop. I do think and hope that after this season, for many more seasons to come, we'll be talking about the Super Bowl window being open. I just don't think they have enough to win the Super Bowl mm-hmm. this year.
No, I hope you're right. And I think certainly breaking that terrible playoff drought is going to be one of the critical components to this season. Can you run through exactly your AFC North standings just to show where you have Pittsburgh aligning relative to the rest of a very competitive AFC North?
I have them tying with the Bengals at 11-6 overall, just the Bengals winning the tiebreaker there. So Bengals 11-6, Steelers 11-6, Baltimore 10-7, Cleveland 8-9. So a very three game difference between the Browns and the 11 win divisional winners there. I think the Bengals will stumble a couple of times this year. And look, you know, you even predicted them to lose that week one game against the Browns, something along those lines. They're going to be a good team. I just wonder if they're going to be as good as last year's team, on top of it there. Maybe they win one or two more games than what I'm giving them credit for. But I have Bengals, Steelers, Ravens, Browns, with the Browns bringing up the rear with 8 wins only.
And then for a playoff perspective, you have just the Bengals and Steelers making it in the North, or did you get Baltimore squeezed in there too?
I do not have the Ravens making the playoffs.
Okay. And you got Pittsburgh as the 7 seed at 11-6?
Correct.
Okay. Man, 11, and that would just show you how tough the AFC is if you go 11-6 and still just get in that 7 seed there. For me,
and that's what I put in there too. I, you know, AFC, I think sure. is a much better conference than the NFC overall.
Definitely 100%. I don't think there's any debate about that. For me, my first time giving any sort of prediction here, and you guys know my thoughts on some of these seasonal predictions and trying to guess what's going to happen by January. It's pretty fruitless overall. We're all kind of just guessing, so I'm not going to pretend like I, you know, was burning a ton of midnight oil on figuring this one out. But my vibe for the season is, I'll just get to the point here. I've got Pittsburgh going 10-7, making the playoffs as probably a 6 or 7 seed, but being one and done, just falling short. They get back to the playoffs, first time under Kenny Pickett, but just kind of with a bit younger team trying to go through playoff experiences on the road against probably a tough opponent. I got them, unfortunately, again, I know, being one and done, but making the playoffs. I have them finishing 3rd in the AFC North. I got Baltimore winning the North at 12-5. If they stay healthy with better wide receivers, weapons in the pass game, something they've been missing for years, that's going to vault them. Bengals 11-6, Steelers 10-7, Browns, like you, Dave, 8-9. I got 3 teams from the North making the playoffs, including Pittsburgh. So that's my vibe overall. I know it's only a one win jump from a year ago. You know, I just don't know if Pittsburgh's going to go on a 7-2 type streak that they went on last year. Now, granted, will they go on a 2-6 start like they did last year? You know, who's to say there? But just in a tough AFC North, I think this team can be certainly much better than a year ago without their record necessarily reflecting a huge jump in wins, but they're going back to the playoffs. I will be disappointed, Dave, if this team cannot at least make the playoffs. Of course, you want to break that playoff, you know, win drought. That's been a huge issue there, but at least getting back to the playoffs and proving to me that you can get to that point in a competitive AFC and AFC North is going to be the first step there. So it's not ideal, obviously, but that's my prediction here. I'm sticking to it. 10-7, one and done in the playoffs.
Who do you have mapped out who you have them losing to? I mean, you've already picked them.
I don't.
Beat the 49ers.
I didn't take it that far in terms of the whole prediction. You know, you can probably assume they're going to face a Buffalo or a Kansas City or maybe, you know, one of these AFC North teams here in Baltimore, Cincinnati in the playoffs.
what's one game on this schedule that you think the Steelers, at least looking at it, should win that they might slip up on? See, that game for me is the Patriots game.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always Pittsburgh always surprises you. I think I don't know if it's going to be a should win, but at Seattle, week 17 on the road, you know, it's going to be a tough one. I don't know who's going to be the actual favorite there by then. You know, could Tennessee give you an issue in week 9? Similarly built team, you know, that could be one. So I don't really have a particularly great answer. They're never good going out to Vegas in week 3, so that's probably something to also monitor there.
What is the ceiling and the in making my prediction, I came up with a ceiling and a floor. The ceiling I have at 9 wins. I mean, the floor at 9 wins and the ceiling I had at 12 wins.
Yeah, I'm probably with you 100% on that, Dave. It's hard to pick this team to be below 500. And then, yeah, I mean, if everything hits perfectly, I could see this team definitely getting 12 wins. I mean, that's the high end if it all works out. But this team is really talented. They stay healthy. Everything kind of works together. The offense takes a jump. I mean, I think, you know, that's a fairly wide range for a 17-game schedule, but I think 9 to 12 is pretty solid there.
What happens for some god-awful reason this team finishes less than 500 and misses, you know, obviously probably missed the playoffs at that point. What has happened to cause that?
Because secondary.
Look, here's the thing, as bullish as major media and all, I mean, the over under win total, which generally as a whole, I think over the years, the Steelers have crushed, you know, you know, you want to make money, bet on the Steelers to bust the win total. But I mean, that number still has been hovering around 8.5. I think at some places now it's jumped to 9. Maybe by the time week 1 universally, it'll be with that late money coming in, it'll be 9 overall. But why isn't there more confidence in the Steelers to hit over 8.5?
Well, I can't speak to how Vegas is setting it up, but I get the sense from the media, there's been a lot. I mean, I think half, like 75% of the media is on the Steelers bandwagon right now. There's only a handful of names, I think, that are really downplaying their chances. So I think Pittsburgh has really been the apple of the NFL's eye as that quote unquote sleeper team based on the really strong preseason that they have had. You ask me, you know, what would happen if this team doesn't have the season that it wants to? I think a couple things. Secondary, is the quarterback play strong enough to deal with some of these, you know, elite quarterbacks and elite wideouts? That's probably a fair question there. And some growing pains early for this defense that's been overhauled pretty substantially. B, can they truly get enough explosive plays offensively? That's never been their personality, at least not in a long, long time. And they are, I think, making strides in that direction. But is it enough in a world that demands not just some of that, but a lot of those big plays? And then the uncomfortable conversation we may have if they're 8-9 and don't have any substantial injuries is Kenny Pickett the high-end guy that Pittsburgh needs? I'm not trying to say that now, but you're asking the question. I know if they go 8-9 and they're not, you know, they don't lose any key piece for any large amount of time, the Pickett conversation will occur. In this, again, when you got Burrow, you got Watson and Jackson, three, you know, either definitely high-end or potentially, in the case of Watson, high-end quarterbacks. The question may be, can Kenny Pickett compete with that?
Okay. All right. You know, obviously, I think that's a top 10 defense if they stay healthy. I think if we're talking about this team underperforming, I want to think that it's going to be less about Pickett and more about what the defense didn't do on their side of the football for whatever reason.
That's fair. How good do you think this offense can be? You said top 10 defense. We talking top 15 offense?
Yeah, I think right in the middle of the pack. Look, if they don't increase their explosive plays and their yards after the catch, it's going to be hard to be a middle of the pack team.
Right.
You know? And then obviously Matt Cannon will be gone, yada, 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 you know? So, I'm still bullish on him becoming that quarterback to make the 2.0, just in net yards passing attempt jump at a minimum. Once again, we need to see that number, like, what did I say, 6.2, 6.3, maybe not the full 2.0 jump, but it's got to be over 6, you know. And once again, if you look back at his games from past the Saints game on last year, I think he accomplished that. a much more talented offensive group top to bottom this time. That's why I'm expecting him to kind of pick up where he left off at last year, though. If he makes a 2.0 NEA jump or more, this team's going to, I think, win some. You know, we might be talking about the 12 or 13 game mm-hmm. or win ceiling there.
Sure. I'm not going to deny that. I think the ceiling for this team is high, but I think you can say that about a lot of these teams in the AFC. The Bengals think they have obviously a high ceiling, and the Ravens and the Browns. The Bengals, I do think, when they lose their top safeties and Jesse Bates and Von Bell and trying to replace, that's going to be maybe one of those big losses that we don't realize how big it is until they start getting kind of getting cooked in the pass game. And the Browns, I mean, how good are the Browns going to be, Dave? I mean, they could be a 13-win team. That wouldn't floor me. I mean, they could be a 7-win team, and it wouldn't floor me. It really comes down to Deshaun Watson, and that's the $215 million or whatever it is dollar question.
All right, well, let's go back to one of the things I highlighted as one of the biggest potential snafu, bugaboos, whatever you want to call it when it comes to this season. It's the AFC North, and that's what prevented me from putting them up in the 12-13-win category, because I think, you know, my prediction is them going 3-3. What do you think they do in division?
Yeah, 3-3 sounds about right. They all went 3-3 last year. They just kind of beat up on each other. I mean, again, if you didn't go 4-2, then that can really be the difference between your season advancing in the playoffs and sitting at home or being a wild card team. So I think 3-3 is kind of the easy answer to give, but they're going to be tough one possession type games. And, you know, this thing could be 4-2, 2-4. There's kind of a gauntlet of options here.
All right, I'm gonna frame this one last way with you here.
Okay.
All right. If the Steelers beat the 49ers in week one, and if they go 4-2 in the division, does that shift your season record from 10 wins?
It would probably bump them up to 11. That was just sitting at that point, 6 weeks in.
Okay. All right. I mean, we're both look. We're going to be called a lot of names because we don't think the Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl this year, right? You know, but I mean, we're both bullish on this team overall.
I think it's a better team. And again, my prediction.
I think they're a little bit better than you do, probably by a little bit there, because I think they can sneak into playoffs and win a game. Maybe. And
look, I think they're capable.
I mean, could you know, depending on how the seeding goes, maybe you get a Jacksonville, after playing them earlier in the season, obviously, you know, maybe you have to go there. I mean, this could be like a home game for the Steelers anyway.
That's true. That's true.
And there, I mean, you can map out scenarios, I think, where they could win a playoff game.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, again, you buy the lottery tickets, you get in the playoffs. Who the heck knows what's going to happen by then? Obviously, you've had a pretty good season to get into that and beat out all these competitive teams. So I'm not saying they can't win a playoff game. I'm just saying we've been down this road before. And for maybe a younger team, you know, first playoff game for Kenny Pickett, for some of these younger guys. And again, you're probably facing a really, really good team, the AFC. If you're the 7 seed, you're playing the 2 seed. So I think Pittsburgh will be the underdog in that game, and probably rightfully so. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that they can't do that. I like this team. I think they've had a really good offseason. You know, I'm happy to be wrong, but I see improvement. You get in the playoffs, and listen, let's hope we're both right. They advance to the postseason, and we'll take it from there about who they play and the prediction and all that kind of stuff. Those are good problems for this team to have.
Yeah, I'd like to come out of this season with this team making the playoffs, having a playoff win, and feeling a lot better about Kenny Pickett. If they can accomplish those things, then I think, man, it's really looking pot. Because once again, if you have a quarterback in this league, especially the kind of defense that the Steelers normally like to put on the field and all like that, you can compete for a championship. So my hope is after the season is over with, we say, look, the Super Bowl window's open now.
Right. So just to recap, you got Pittsburgh 11-6, wild card with a playoff win. I have them 10-7, wild card, 1-done. So that is the difference there.
All right. So the Mike Tomlin bumper sticker and playoff wins carries on, right?
Right, right. All right, Dave.
Since 2016.
Yeah, the drought continues on my end, but happy to be wrong about that. All right, Dave, let's get to a couple of reader emails and close out today's show.
All right, let's see what we have in here from Bryce. Can't believe week one's here. if Cam is healthy and plays, then I'm all in on another Tomlin week one masterpiece victory. I can see it coming. He says, my thoughts, let the Matt Canada watch begin now. I know it would be unprecedented, but do you see any scenario where the Steelers offense continue to look like it did last, blah, blah, blah. And why not? Basically, he's saying, other than saying they just don't do things that way, is there any scenario you can come up with this team firing Matt Canada during the season?
You never say never, as Mike Tomlin will say. That's not their MO. They just don't do that with coordinators.
He said you can't say that, though.
I can't say that. Then I don't know what really to say.
I don't know what way other to answer that myself. I mean, it would. He framed it. It's unprecedented, and until they go the other way, it's hard to imagine this team firing their offensive coordinator midseason. Period. I mean, I don't know what other way to frame it other than that.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible? Sure, anything's possible. If they completely suck and they're, you know, two wins, you know, 7 weeks into the year, then yeah. I mean, it's, you know, he's not going to come back in 2024. I'll tell you that much. But, you know, in midseason, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
With the addition of Holcomb and Roberts and their physicality, would you want to see the Steelers run more of those double A gap mugs looks this week to try to stress their interior of that San Fran offensive line? You already said you'd like to see them go after him a little bit.
Yeah, I think a couple of those. I think you can lean on, you know, Holcomb's not going to be a tremendous blitzer. I just like, you know, mugging those A gaps in general. Let's pressure and stress that interior offensive line on the road, force those guys to communicate, and sometimes that makes that tackle pinch down and creates a better, you know, matchup where you get that end unblocked. So bring some, I mean, Roberts can be an effective blitzer. Alexander can be an effective blitzer. I think those guys can do that. And it's probably better to blitz Roberts and try to have him cover Christian McCaffrey. So, yeah, I mean, I want to see some sim pressures and some, you know, actual blitzes from Roberts and company.
Jeff Berg writes in, if Dan Moore plays great all season and Chooks plays well all year, how do you get Broderick Jones into the lineup? I know things have a funny way of working themselves out, but it's an interesting scenario. Like y'all have said, a first-round tackle usually starts. I understand why he's not starting now. It's just a unique scenario, he says. How much that's question number one. Look, I mean, I understand the question, Jeff, and throwing the scenario out here, but, I mean, we haven't even hit week one. I mean, let's get to the bye week, and if Dan Moore and Chooks are playing extremely well and this team, you know, let's even move a game past that. I had them going, 5-1 in the first six games. If you're at that point, both tackles are playing well, how do you get Broderick Jones into the lineup? Well, I mean, if you're winning and those guys are playing well, he probably sits a little bit longer, and that, you know, that might be a plus in and of itself. Assuming they are winning there. It's just, it's one of those scenarios that, you know, it goes back to the, and he stated in here, things have a funny way of working themselves out. So, Jeff, that's probably a better question. Why don't you email us during the bye week and ask that same question?
Yeah, it's a fair question. My terrible take today is actually on, and I mentioned this Wednesday, I think we're going to talk about the tackle situation a lot next year. What happens to a core four and more? Does he shift? Does he go to the bench? Broderick Jones, all that kind of stuff. The option or the roster bonus that's due on a core four. So good questions to have, good problems to have. I've said it before. I apologize for being a broken record today, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Who the heck knows how it'll happen? If it does, fine. We'll deal with it in March.
Right. And look, as I already said, Chooks is, this is an important year for a core four because of the roster bonus he is due, and obviously got a young tackle behind, you know, starting the season on the bench as well, too. He goes on to write, how much of a concern is Zach Gentry being on the enemy sidelines as far as telling the Bengals exactly how the offense will be? In other words, how concerned are you that Zach Gentry signed with the Bengals? I have zero concern, to be honest with you.
Yeah, zero. A, the Bengals know Pittsburgh pretty well. They've been playing each other two times a year every year for how long now? And they don't even play the Bengals until, week 12. Who knows if Gentry will even be a Steeler or be a Bengal by then. So it's all way down the road kind of stuff.
All right. Those are the couple that, we got one more here from Chris Wade. Hey guys, two quick fun ones. Who scores first in the game? The Steelers or the 49ers, and who scores first for the Steelers? Kenny throwing, Boz kicking, or one of our two backs rushing, or a defensive TD. So he wants to know who scores first in the game, the Steelers or the 49ers. I'm going to say the Steelers score first in this game. And I'm going to say it's a Najee Harris rushing touchdown.
I'll say the 49ers score first. Pittsburgh still is never a strong starting team. That's not been their style. When Pittsburgh does get on the board, I'll go with George Pickens' touchdown to be a little different. I'm glad you included defensive touchdown, though, considering that's how it happened last year. But I'll go George Pickens from Kenny Pickett from 7 yards out.
Righty. All right. I think we've run a little bit long for obvious reasons here because of previewing the season and doing picks and everything like that. So we'll wrap this up and tell everybody thank you for following along during the off season and all. On the site, the podcast, social media, Facebook, Twitter, all that. We certainly do appreciate you. We look forward to covering the season like we normally do for you here. And obviously 3 podcasts a week and guest, beat writers and all like that. So anyway, we will be back on Monday to recap what happened on Sunday between the Steelers and the 49ers. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we're doing, want to donate, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button, upright navigation bar. And also, if you'd like an ad-free version, you can find that up there as well, too. So until Monday, have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the game. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.